Hi, I'm Phil Marion, and this is Raps Rant, hosted by myself, Megan Smith, and Blair Johnson. The show is all things Raptors in the NBA. We cover current stats, news, and feature exciting guest speakers. Welcome to episode two.
Thanks. Welcome to you, too. What's going on, everybody? Megan Smith here. If this is your first time listening, here's how it's going to work. Show is broken up into four quarters, 10 minutes each. First quarter is a recap of the last week. What was the Raps record? Anything stand out in the games? Interesting headlines? Second quarter, all about the stats. We break them down for the Raptors and around the NBA. The third quarter will typically be a guest speaker, debate between us clowns, whatever. And fourth quarter, is rumors and news from around the NBA. So let's get after it. Hi, boys.
Okay. So just to start, and we'll quickly recap just what happened. Four games. So Raptors were 2-2. Game against the Grizzlies at home. They won 119-90. Then they had the Kings at home, 120-105 win. Loss on the road to the Pacers the next night, 110-106. And then the big game on Friday against Houston, 121-119 loss. We'll probably spend more time on the Houston game, I would think. But a couple things I can highlight. So I'll just start out, just give a couple things on the Grizzlies win. Basically, that was Danny Green's game. That was really his best, obviously his best shooting performance in seven threes in the third quarter alone.
He's been incredibly consistent.
Yes.
Minus the San Antonio game.
Yes. And so, you can rely on him. And so as a team, like, they were 17 of 36 from three, 47%. I mean, if you shoot that, you're going to win the game.
Absolutely.
31 assists. They only had 10 turnovers. That's still actually a little high for them, but otherwise, good game. Siakam was a plus 40.
Oh, future all-star.
And Kyle Lowry was a plus 28, or no, plus 38, sorry. I don't think that ever
Kyle
happens.
Kyle Lowry over everything, baby. Okay. He's awesome.
So they had 37 boards that game. I think it was 43, but eight were offensive. Anyways, good game. Really took care of it. Kawhi didn't play. Next thing, Memphis. It's the Kings. They won 120-105. Really, it's just there's not much to talk about this game. I mean, they played consistently. They did well. They won. Fred VanVleet had a good game. He was the top scorer.
It was a balanced performance.
It was just a balanced performance. Sure. Really not much to say. Pacers. The Pacers game was interesting.
Yes.
Once again, no Kawhi. So this is three games in a row he didn't play. And then you have, in the Pacers game, the thing that stood out to me, what I liked about it is that they just had so much heart. They had so much hustle. They were down most of the game.
They grinded.
They grinded and came back. It's not the first time they've done it this season either, which was I'd like to see. The thing that was alarming again is in certain clutch scenarios, their defensive rebounding is terrible. There's a lot of clutch moments where they didn't get that rebound, and it allowed the Pacers to get second chance points. And
Jonas is a part of that. That is true.
That doesn't help. But I don't think he's going to be a main guy in the fourth quarter, though, because this was the fourth quarter.
I think, with all the stats and everything, the thing that clouded that whole game for me was the Victor Oladipo injury.
It's too bad. It's really, really unfortunate.
Tough to watch. And you know what? Before that, I was like, why is Kawhi resting so much? Why is he out? That is the reason.
Yeah.
Because you lose your number one option there, and your season's over.
Yeah, that's true. My perspective on the resting thing has always been I don't like players being rested ever. As much as I'm a sport fanatic and take it too far sometimes, you really do have to realize at some points that it's about the fans. And if Kawhi is genuinely still a little bit injured and he has to do the rest, fine. But if it's really just a worry that you're going to have a Victor Oladipo scenario, you can't ever control that. It's just going to happen. It's basketball.
I agree. I thought with that specific game, it was a great game. We fought for 48 minutes, especially on second night of a back-to-back. I thought it was impressive. I did think we were killed by our pathetic three-point shooting in the first half.
It wasn't good.
But the fact that they had a chance to win and the intensity was there, we're still 2-1 in the series, so it comes to a tiebreaker.
Indiana's done. You've Oladipo out. Now the Eastern Conference is late. It's Boston, Milwaukee, Toronto.
I did
Philly.
Also think another standout in that game was that I'm liking how Nurse is willing to experiment with all these line changes. What at one point we were down 15 in third, and he had Powell, Miles, and McCaw in for Freddie, Green, and Serge, I think. it didn't exactly work, but I just think it reiterated our ability to throw so many different lineups.
Well, this is the one thing about Gatting, which I think you'll see more with, Nick Nurse was a long time, like a G League coach. Think about in the G League what you have to deal with. Call-ups, injuries, normal stuff. You have a whole other dimension to that coaching that you have to play around with lineups just for players that are not going to be there or players that are added in. So that's probably one of his strong points is dealing with adversity. So that's actually a very good thing, which I'm hoping will translate into the playoffs.
I agree, 100%.
Houston.
Oh, Jesus. I have so many thoughts.
Okay. Well, sorry. I mean, I really don't want to. I mean, most of the game for anyone that watched it was just very frustrating. You're watching it be like, I can't believe this. National TV come out, look like they're getting killed. Now, they kept bringing it back, but to be down what they were with as little time, I think it was just under 5 minutes to go, and they were down by 15 or 16 points. And that furious comeback was just amazing.
I like the fact that they never give up. This is a different Raptors team because
they would have given up in the past.
Any other year, 100%. I just think the bottom line of that game was that they confronted the challenge of how do you play potentially one of, if not the best, shout out to Wilt, obviously, but the best offensive player in the game right now. And how do you try and stop him? I think what they did is they just said, we're going to try and shut down Harden and let everybody else beat you. Unfortunately, everybody else did beat them. Fried was an absolute beast.
Especially Kenneth Fried, who I ripped on in last week's episode.
Totally. Yeah. He was great. Harden is ridiculous. He hasn't scored less than 30 points since, I think, December 11th. He has this natural ability to create for himself. And his pull-up shot is absolutely deadly. He gets to the free throw line with ease, and he can basically play point guard when Chris Paul is out, which is pretty impressive.
That's clear by the no assist. They had 17 assists in that game, Houston. 17. Yeah.
So, that's what's so crazy is that he scores and he passes, and just the way he carves out opposing teams' defenses, it's just insane. He's fun to watch, except when he's playing your team, really. But I guess really the problem was with Friday's game was just, it wasn't Harden scoring. It was 35 points, I think he ended with.
It wasn't a lot.
And that's not
He didn't shoot well from three.
Yeah, I just think the Raps' abhorrent defense on everyone besides Harden in the first quarter really got them into a hole. And their horrible execution in the final possession. I thought that was...
That is another thing for me to bring up.
Buried my head.
That's really the only thing. I mean, they played so well to get back into it just at the end.
Yeah.
They had a couple lucky things that went their way. I mean, an inbound pass, and I forget who it was. I think it might have been Ariza, or no, it was Tucker. Literally stepped out, and it was like, wow. Yeah. After they hit a three, get it back, and there's still over 30 seconds left. But
that was one big brain
The last part. Possession, yeah, which brutal. I don't get. I mean, Blair and I talked about it last week, was that, to be those last possessions, if you're going to just give it to Kawhi and run the clock down, like Houston sniffed out that switch. It was an easy switch. It was a lot easier to defend, and they created a terrible shot.
Yeah.
And it's not, and I know you got to get it into Kawhi's hand, but, and have him be the guy, but this is why I think you need a second playmaker.
I think, the first time I watched it, I was furious at Nick Nurse. I was like, that's a horrible play call. But then the second time watching it, I thought that maybe I have to say execution by Kawhi wasn't great because he had a chance there at the top of the arc where he could have
gone left. Well, he also could have gone left.
Yeah, but he dribbled it like two more times, and Harden just got up into him, and he couldn't get a shot off.
I will give Harden credit for that possession. He actually played pretty good defense on that. He really did. He surprised Kawhi. You could see it.
Well, PJ Tucker in the post-game scrum was like, Harden can play defense when he wants to.
Blows my mind. It's like when he wants to. You're a professional, played all the time. It blows my mind.
I mean, that was kind of a middle finger, but
deserves credit? That's a joke.
I do think there's some things they did well. You mentioned Danny Green earlier. He did a pretty good job on Harden early. He forced him to his right, which I thought was great. Although the questionable switching, I thought that stood out to me. Leonard didn't play Harden a whole lot, but when he did, he played him well, and he did trap him a few times, which turned into turnovers, which was good. The whole team did a good job forcing him to his right. However, this didn't work the whole game. As he went off in the second half, Raps couldn't defend his floaters, deferred to his teammates, and they made buckets.
Yeah.
The Rocks do have a lot of guys, though, that they can play hard with, like Green, Kawhi, OG,
I think
Pascal,
a lot of people...
Norm. Even McCaw.
I think you can... McCaw was on Golden State. He played some valuable minutes at times with a champion team. So he's been involved in a process, and he's probably... It's good to have guys on the team like that. Although he's going to be a significantly minor role, but
I can't say I understood the signing when they did it, but yeah, I do see his volume now. And
it's just it's not a lot. But
I just think they didn't switch well enough on their screens, and they played hard and well. They just simply came down to the strategy of daring other guys to beat you, and they did.
All right.
Jesus.
That went quick.
That's aggressive. All right. Next.
Quarter two is the stats.
Oh, boy. All right. Blair, this is our stat guy.
Put me in, coach. Put me in, coach.
All right. Bring it home.
I was born for this.
All right. Let me cue up the quarter countdown here. Stats, Phil.
I'm gonna start out here. I'm just gonna. You know, I think we're gonna be having a little discussion on Kyle Lowry in quarter three. But I'm gonna bring up here. I'm gonna bring a point, and I'm gonna give Megan a shot here since she's pro Lowry. But I'm gonna reveal a hand here. I got an interesting stat, which actually Megan provided, which is on,
shocking.
Which is on. Well, just in terms of this is very negative against Lowry and you're pro Lowry. That's not shocking that you would find it.
I had a moment where I was down, but now I'm back
to Lowry. So here we go. So clutch field goal percentage, which is basically measured last 5 minutes of the game within 5 points in a game. What's your field goal percentage with a minimum of 35 attempts? Guess who's the worst in the NBA? Kyle Lowry.
Wow, Phil's stealing my thunder here already. I knew he was going to do that.
22.9%. Like by far. Like it's not number two worst is Russell Westbrook at 28%. We don't even need to follow anyone else because I just don't care. It's all about who's number one. It's Kyle. Anyways, Blair, go.
I can tell you this right now, Phil. If someone jumps back to our first or second podcast and it sounds the same as our 40th podcast, which is going to happen in the playoffs, if we're talking about these same things, we're dead. We're just dead in the water. That's if something doesn't change, and this is about focusing on the stats this section, but the stats, you know, at the end of the day, we live and die by the stats. If our second best player, our supposed second best player, continues to play like this, the Raptors have absolutely, I'll tell you a stat, they have absolutely 0% chance of winning anything. That's the most important stat here. So again, just a quick recap of last week we talked about Leonard at the end of the game, whether he was clutch or not clutch. He was 6 of 18 in the final minute of the game. Which again is, you know, he's taking some of the highest volume of shots in the league. His percentage isn't that high. This is in the final minute of the game. And of course, it's a small sample size. So when you're 6 of 18, we'll sort of let that slide. Now, what we did talk about is in those clutch situations, the clutch situations are you within 5 points with 5 minutes to go? Well, he's the second best shooter behind someone we'll probably talk about later in the podcast, which is Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal is the only guy that has, absolutely. He's the only guy that has a higher shooting percentage with more than 50 shots in the game in the last 5 minutes when the team is within 5 points. And I think this, again, this sort of expands on what we saw in Houston, which was Kawhi had some really great possessions down the stretch. They just happened to be outside of the final minute. Because when it came to the final minute, the play, again, we're going to come back to this. Is it you give your best player the best chance to win the game? What I keep seeing time and time again is those looks are 50% of the time or 60% of the time are pretty mediocre. Yeah. He's had some good looks at the end of the games that he's just missed. But, you know, the Houston one, you know, Phil and I talked a little bit about this. You have an opportunity to go in probably, you know, the lane is open at that point in the basketball game.
Go tie it.
They are playing him so hard at the top of the key, and you're basically saying, we signed the world's greatest defensive player, yet we have no trust in him to make a stop on the other end of the basketball court. That to me is a problem when you're and we're looking here and we're seeing the stats showing that offensively at the end of the games they're not good. So offensively you're not great, and you're supposed to be really great defensively, but immediately you don't trust your defense. That's very worrying to me. And again, if we keep talking about this week after week after week about the stagnation of the offense at the end of the game, we're going to be sitting here years.
Yeah, no, it's going to be the same thing. Well, that was the whole point. So that scenario with Leonard, how many other times has it happened this year that where he hasn't had that last second shot in Boston? Like a number of them I can reference. I don't think he's made one. He hasn't made one right at the buzzer, has he?
No, he hasn't. Not.
Yeah, he's probably 0 for 6 or something like that, which I'm not questioning, but it just goes back to my point that, you know, we had a problem with DeMar in those ISO scenarios, and Kawhi is not going to be that much better.
Where you see, again, if you watch, if you watch the game, again,
well,
he
hasn't made the shots.
One of the things that Phil talks
about. Lateral quickness or ability is what it once was.
Again, one of the things Phil and I talk about is like DeMar DeRozan is an excellent, you know, under contact basketball player. He's a physical guy. He was probably number two in the NBA in free throw attempts. He's always up there in the top five. He's a great 2-point shooter. He's not a great 3-point shooter, but he's a great 2-point shooter. So at the end of games, you know, if you look at Leonard versus DeRozan, they're pretty similar players in that type of an offense. I think where you see the difference when you watch the games, again, not getting away too much from the stats, but when you watch the games, is in those last 5 minutes, Leonard's very patient with the basketball.
Yeah.
He gets in the lane, he pump fakes a lot, he'll hold guys off, he gets a really like controlled shot.
And how many defenders are on him, he always squares up. Like he's so effective at getting.
And that's
good
and you
looks.
You said it exactly right. He squares up so often. He's a high percentage shooter when he squares up. But these final buzzer beaters are fadeaway threes.
I'm just going off of the last possessions. The shots are missed. I'm not trying to blame Kawhi, but they're poor shots.
Quite honestly, I don't think he's been playing enough to have that comfort level yet. I don't know. I still would have him take the last shot. Ten out of ten times.
I'm not saying he shouldn't take the last shot. I'm just saying that like the execution of how you're getting the ball.
Maybe they need to set him up. Maybe there needs to be a play, a few extra passes there. There needs to be.
So here's a really cool stat, okay? And I think this sort of comes down. I was going to put this at the bottom underneath when I talked about James Harden, but the game the other night, the San Antonio game. San Antonio, I forget who they're playing against.
Oh,
but
God, do we have to relive that?
Well, no, it wasn't against the Raptors. I forget who they were playing, but long story short, the game was within 2 points.
Yeah.
I think it was Utah they were playing against. And DeMar had a great game. He was 12 for 18 from the field up until that point. He was the leading scorer. Pop pulled him off the floor for the final offensive possession of the game. And Pop said, we were going for the win.
Yeah.
And DeMar DeRozan, he's not the guy going to take that shot for us.
No, well, he needed a 3-point shot.
He needed a 3-point shot.
That's not DeMar.
Exactly, but we go back to this. So we're sort of jumping back and forth here. But DeMar DeRozan is a 28% career free throw or a 3-point shooter. He's 7 for 40 this year. Okay, mm-hmm. So he's 17.5% this year.
Wow.
He hasn't shot a three in the last 11 games. So Pop is like just quit it. Well, Nick Nurse, on the other hand, is giving the ball to Kyle Lowry at the end of basketball games, and Kyle Lowry's still on the floor. And I hate to tell you, but if I'm Leonard, and I said to you this to you the other night, I was like, Kyle Lowry's costing us Kawhi Leonard right now. Because if I'm Kawhi Leonard and I'm looking at him going, that's who the guy is, my number two, I'm not feeling very confident. At the end of basketball games, that guy's not bailing me out.
Well, that's the play. So you should have – this is – the Houston play was – Kawhi shouldn't have the ball dribbling. He's not – when you look at like a Kyrie Irving or anything along those lines – you want to have a guy that is going – Kawhi should be coming off screens, whatever it is. Try and get him in a scenario where he can excel.
And if he's not and he sees Lowry wide open for three, you think he's even going to pass to him at this point?
Well, he's not going to pass, but you want the guy – so say it was Lowry, the ball. You don't want – like say they play good defense on a screen scenario where you're trying to get Leonard the ball. Well, then you have someone like Lowry going for the shot. Well, we just mentioned his clutch field goal percentage, and it's not going to happen. So I keep saying Beal. It could be a Beal-type player, some other playmaker. We'll just use Bradley Beal hypothetically. If Bradley Beal was in that scenario and had the ball, you'd be okay with him taking the shot or driving the lane. Like, you're probably going to have a bit more success because, that Kyle Lowry shot, that 3-point shot he took at the end where he was open.
I don't think the ball ever got above the rim. It was low left. It was like a Scott Norwood kick.
It was worse than my performance in my rec league on Thursday when I think I was 0 of 12 from three.
Oh, do better, Phil. Honestly, okay. So, but guys, this is my argument with that. Regardless if Lowry's shot is falling or not, he's just plain special. And this, I thought, was evidenced in the Pacers game. There was one sequence there where he was driving in a very crowded lane. Thought for sure it would be a turnover, but somehow he passed to Green in the corner. Must have gone at least two or three Pacers hands. And then the beautiful part was that he didn't even stop moving. He ran to the elbow and gets off a three-pointer. Bucket. This is what makes him special, his ability to read even the smallest defensive mistakes and take advantage of it. So really? Do we want to get into it now? Sure. You should see these guys. They are just,
red. I know. Let's just rip through these two stats quickly so we can get them out of the way. Okay, so as Phil said, 35 plus shots in those last 5 minutes within 5 points, and Lowry's 22% overall. Okay, this year, statistically, he's not special. We can just say that. He's one of eight middle of the game. He's one of eight. That's, you know, if you hear about this Michael Jordan, oh, I've missed more shots than I've made and all this kind of garbage. Michael Jordan won 6 NBA championships. He hit a running buzzer beater against Cleveland in the playoffs. That's infamous. Yeah. They will never be forgotten. The end of the game is when you become special. Not in the third quarter, not in the second quarter. It's the last minute of a game.
Okay, find me a better point guard or better floor general in the NBA right now than Kyle Lowry. I
want to find is a winner.
Scheme.
I want to find a fourth quarter winner. Yeah. That's it.
Well,
but that's
why we're hijacked with Kyle Lowry, because the whole system's been built around him too much that you can't have him. Like, he shouldn't be the number two. You need to bring someone else in who's going to take over that role.
We already know the floor general. We're all going to say we don't care. It's a lot. One last year, I believe that Leonard's probably going to leave anyways. Playoff Rondo.
Honestly, that's embarrassing. You just said that.
But it's actually not, from the standpoint that guy is a half court.
I do agree. It's a very risky proposition.
Oh, it's extremely risky.
Okay, but, so let's bring Spitgate to Canada. Good idea, guys. That guy's a clown. I hate Rondo.
He is one of the best half court point guards out there.
Megan, we all agree with you is we need Lowry to be special.
Yes.
No, so I will agree. I don't think Lowry's special. I don't. But he has the ability to raise his game. We have to pray to God that he happens to do it at the right time. It's never been the right time for him yet. We can maybe luck into that. Maybe he closes his eyes one time and the ball goes in at the end of the game, and I will take that, because sometimes being good and lucky are very similar things.
Sure.
But right now, he scored 15 points or less in 70% of his last 10 games.
Well, the point
have your second best player, who's, again, maybe he doesn't need to be a scorer. He's still second in the NBA. He's averaging 9.4 points per game. Another stat.
Or assists, you mean.
Assists per game. But at the same point, he needs to be a scorer, or, you know, he needs to at least be clutch.
Okay, I totally get it. But just with your whole stat terror here, if you look at them, Lowry hangs out at the top of most advanced stats lists. Excuse me. This shows his value right there. Anyone with eyes can see he's a giant pain in the ass on defense. He takes charges. He's tough as nails. He switches. His ball handling. He's always moving.
Yes, I meant to do that in the middle of Megan's rant.
I'm going
to
steal that.
You know what? It's a perfect segue into the third quarter.
Okay.
Because this is the rant section, and I wanted to get you going on a rant.
All right.
Here you go. You keep that thought going. I'm going to pass this back to Phil.
All right. So I, in my opinion, he always plays hard, whether his shot is dropping or not. Whether he's bricking them or not, teams need to defend him, so they do follow him around, which leaves a lane open for his teammates. He's one of the best floor generals, like I said, in this league, and he creates for his teammates beautifully. He is a huge part of Serge's resurgence, and he consistently sets him up for his dominant pick-and-pop game. His cuts are always on point. Guys, he's for a little shrimp. What is he, 6'1"? He is an above-average offensive rebounder. I really, really think you're wrong.
I am wrong about Kyle Lowry 100% in the regular season, for probably leading up to the All-Star break. Every single year, he's got great stats, All-Star consideration, has been an All-Star, leads the floor. He is too inconsistent in the moments that really matter. And that's the point I always make about Kyle. I hope that you can literally come back to me and say, Phil, like throw it in my face and say I'm wrong. I would love it, because that would mean that he's performing in clutch scenarios, but he's consistently not been around in the playoffs. He's consistently not been around in those moments with less than 5 minutes in the game.
Okay, I do agree with you. It's been a really weird season. He came out fire.
This is every year.
Yeah, well, okay, so he came out hot fire. We all know that. But then he scored single digits for like four games. Then he's hurt. Then he's sidelined a month. Coming back, my only concern at this point is he seems to have left his three-point shot and his aggressiveness
on the
sidelines. I don't know. What is he averaging? Like 14 points a game right now?
His percentage is 31.9% from three this year right now, which is like it's among his career low. Which
I think to that point, that starts with his lack of aggression. His passiveness is officially become a problem for me, and it's compounded only by the fact that this seems to happen only when Kawhi is on the floor. He's going above and beyond to defer him, and it's irritating. And this, I don't know, could this be a direction from the top dogs to, you know, get Kawhi the ball more often?
Well, you do want to get him the ball.
Or is this a lack of confidence, or is he hurt? Like, and you mentioned it the other day, he looks a little chunked to me. Like, he looks a little
out of shape. He doesn't look in proper shape, and you can see it with his shot. Like, he's never been a guy with a huge arc to his shot, but it really looks flat.
Yeah. I also think an interesting topic is that when Kawhi isn't playing, Kyle does become K-Lo again. Like, Kyle Lowry over everything. He's dominant. He averages, 19.5 points a game on 15 shots. And that's in some – I read some stat that was in something like 36 minutes, I think. Shout out to Zach Lowe there. And I don't know, Lowry – when Lowry plays, they're beating teams by 16 points per 100 possessions. Like, that's pretty telling.
In the regular season. It's great. That's literally all I'm going to say every single time I talk about Kyle Lowry, because that's what he does. And there's been years he's been spectacular. Remember the year, I think it was, 3 years ago, I think DeMar was out for an extended period. He had to pick up the slack. He was spectacular regular season. And so it's like...
wasn't that bad in the playoffs last year.
We got swept.
DeMar was worse.
We got swept.
It doesn't matter.
The thing I always come back, and the thing I come back to on this stuff is, you know, we've all agree, I think, that this is the most important year in the history of the Raptors. Yeah. We the hope that we have,
sure.
I think we think that the core, the supporting cast, everything is aligning for this year to be really special. And it's a bad year to lay an egg. And right now he's averaging 14 points a game. I think it's the seventh best he's ever had. We need his best, not his seventh best. You know, his shooting percentage is one of the lowest he's ever had. We need his best, not his 10th best. So these are the things. You know, Siakam's having a career year. Ibaka's having a great year. Leonard's having a great year. The reason we're picking on Lowry, he's not, you know, in years past, we needed him, you know, it was just him and DeRozan. Now we've really got a chance. He's not even the second best player on the team right now. This guy's got to step up and really, really do something, because, again, this is an opportunity you get once in your life.
I agree. I think he is by far the most important player on this team. But while you may not notice, guys, he always makes the right pass, which often triggers ball movement. His assists are key to success. And I don't know. To me, he just always does good things every single moment he's on the floor. And his value as a two-way player, as a point guard, is unmatched.
I'll go back.
If you mention Rondo again, I'm going to kill you.
I'm going to challenge you on the defensive perspective. He's great at taking charges, but if you really look at him on the perimeter defensive side, he gets blown by all the time. He's not an elite defender.
He's getting older.
No, previous years too, he's not an elite defender. He never has been, and he won't. I don't believe he's ever been considered one. And I'm not going to put it on. I'm not criticizing him for that.
When you allow blow bys and collapsing, it leaves people in the perimeter open. It becomes a problem. It's fine to take charges.
No, I love him for taking charges. It's amazing. There's a lot. You get key change in the game. Your players rally around that. For a guy 6'1" to stand in against a 6'10", 7-footer barreling down the lane, I'm going to support that. I'm going to be happy you did it. You got the ball back.
Yeah, he's tough as nails.
Yeah, you can't deny that. I like Kyle Lowry. I like that he's a Raptor. He's one of the greatest Raptors of all time. I just worry about him. I worry that he's not the guy. Him being our number two, like Blair said, and like I think it's he can't be it. I don't think he's. I'm now starting to think that. Well, he's just not. He's not talented enough to be the number two. He's not.
I disagree.
I just don't think he is. I don't think he's that guy. I don't think he has enough confidence to be that guy. Well, Lowry doesn't lack confidence. He's cocky, and I like that. That's you've got to be a special player.
He's just bitchy.
Be a special player in the NBA. You've got to. But I don't think so. And just one quick thing, you know, Pat Harris. When you do listen to this, I'm ready. I'm ready for you. Come on here. I know you're gonna get loaded up with your stats and info. And you can join Megan, and we can make an entire show about debating Kyle Lowry. I'm ready. Let's do it.
We're going to kill you. You're dead. All right. Is it time to move to the fourth?
I don't know.
There we go.
There we go.
Okay. So what do we want to talk about here? Oh, so Kawhi.
Yeah, we've been bitching and moaning about all the problems. Now we got to figure. Now we got to come out with. We're couch GMs now, figuring out how to fix it.
Okay, but let's talk. Kawhi bought a house, guys. What do you think? It's nice. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it. Oh, it's gorgeous. $13.3 million. Hey, that like came on. I was watching Tim and Sid. Sid Sixero came out. It's getting blown out of proportion from a lot of people. And they're like, "Oh my god, he bought a house. He bought a house in San Diego. That's where he's from.
It's
okay, big deal."
This is the thing. When he bought a house in Toronto, everybody was like, this signifies absolutely nothing. He's from California.
No, purchase is nothing.
No, but plus the house is 2.5 hours away from Staples Center. If anything, to me, this indicates that...
He's just buying a house at home.
I think it's good for us, because why would you... If you were planning on playing in L.A., why would you buy a house 2.5 hours?
No, if he bought a... If he got a, you know, a nice, you know, pad in L.A., I'd be a little worried.
I think it's for his mom. And shout out to Kawhi's sister, by the way. I am a total stalker and reached out to her on Instagram. She responded and said he loves it here.
I was thinking about this the other day, right? Because it was like, we always talk about how Toronto's so world class,
really cool,
but no one's ever heard me say Toronto was world class from the, you know, from November 30th to March the 1st. I literally just hide in my house doing podcasts in the dark. Because Toronto is cold as hell.
Jeremy Castleberry was saying Kawhi has a really good strategy to it. He just goes from garage to garage. It's not like these players are shoveling snow.
It's door to door for sure.
That much. And Doug Smith, good friend of mine, who's going to be on this pod coming up, he was saying that he actually thinks Kawhi is likely to stay. Number one, people leave him alone here. Number two, we're winning. And number three, he's going to get all the money. So I really don't think any NBA player factors in weather.
Yeah, Kawhi is such an interesting... I think he'll find out where he's moving after someone else does. You know, he's just the type of guy, he doesn't even know what's going on. He doesn't speak at all. He doesn't say anything. But he's also a weird... It's hard to pitch him on all the upside of being, you know, Canada's only team and all the endorsements, because he doesn't care. So shy.
But why would he want to go to LA where there's literally paparazzi at every corner? Plus,
I agree. I never saw, LA, just outside of the fact that he's from that area, saw the fit there.
No.
You know, I never saw the fit there. LeBron's not going anywhere for the next couple of years, and Kawhi doesn't want to play
with
LeBron.
His health is a huge factor. And bottom line is, we have one of the best medical staffs in the NBA. Bobby Webster had an interview the other day where he said that's our number one right now. And Kawhi wants to be healthy, and he's, quite honestly, having the best statistical season of his career. So I think that says something.
I mean, you know, again, I've never really been to other stadiums. I know Phil's been in Brooklyn, but from what I hear, we have one of the best, you know, barns in town. And when you go to work, you know, 40 days, 41 days a year, and you just feel that love every single night, it's an amazing atmosphere. There's no question that's amazing. Yeah, it's
5 straight years.
That definitely matters. The city is an amazing city. Lots of places to eat. Great real estate. It's clean. It's nice. I mean, those things all make a difference. The airport's good. It's easy to access. All that kind of fun stuff.
And people leave him alone. It's not like we live in the North Pole. It's not cold the whole season. It's cold for 4 months, but so's New York. That's a destination. So's Chicago.
Absolutely.
Look at Greek Freak in Milwaukee, which is colder than here. Like, I just think the weather debate is ridiculous.
I agree with you guys. I agree that I think the fact that it was 2.5 hours out of town made it even more so, like, that he's not going to L.A. Like, why would you just buy in L.A. then, or close to L.A.?
So buy a second house? Like, makes sense.
Exactly. So I think, to me, that was a sort of a telling thing. Yeah. He's a young guy. It's not like he's got, like, 2 more years to play and he's planning for his retirement. He's got a ways to go.
And we can give him the most money. And money matters, especially if you just drop $13.5 million.
Yeah, California is Canada, right? It's got high taxes too. It's not like he's coming from Texas. He's not going back to Texas. There's no state income tax there. So, you know, that was a, I'm sure that's a bit of a downer. Yeah. But again, he's one of those guys. He's going to do well for himself anyway.
Well,
so
there was an article that was so funny where they were interviewing Serge Ibaka and he was saying, you know, all of our futures depend on Kawhi does. Like, what does Kawhi do? And then you can hear Kawhi in the background. And he said something like, you trash talking me, Serge, or whatever. And Kawhi's like, stay, Kawhi, stay. So, yeah, I mean, it seems to be almost like a joke in the locker room. And it's, you would hope that those guys can recruit. And I think Danny Green's a huge recruiting tool. And I'd love to see him sign a deal, too.
So. Absolutely. I think Danny Green has been a, like, more, he should be talked about more. He's been such a good. We should more, as Blair just said, we should merge podcasts. I'm up for that.
Let's have a goal. Let's just, we want to brunch with Danny Green.
I'm all for it. It's like, I'm going to send this to him so he can hear that. But in any event,
he's great.
No, he's been spectacular. Just, well, he's a New Yorker. So he knows it's close to Toronto. He's familiar with it. It's closer for his family.
He loves it.
He's been going podcast, up. How long has he been going up to the Muskoka area for his basketball camps? He's been involved in this area for a long time. And he's playing so well this year. So glad we have him. He's been such a great addition.
He's got He's got a winning, but I think for Kawhi,
I try and ignore all of the Kawhi talk of whether he stays or leaves because, like, just look at Kawhi. How are you going to know?
Yeah.
Nobody knows. So I just leave it because at the end of the day, I'm just trying to have the perspective. If he leaves, it's his loss.
But you're trying to protect yourself. Like, I feel like I'm an open book and I'm just gonna be crushed and in the field.
I will not be devastated if he leaves. As I've mentioned before, I think Masai Ujiri's done a spectacular job with this team. I think he's opened up the door for showing the league what a superstar can do here with Kawhi being here. That you're starting to get more people get it that Toronto is a special place to play. And I think someone else will fill his shoes after he's gone.
I think he stays. Let's save this debate for June.
Sure.
He's going to stay, and I will literally be in the fetal position.
Listen, the longer that Toronto continues to have an elite team, right? First in the East, you know, and it just puts us in one of those, we're starting to look like an elite franchise, and that attracts people. Yeah. Winners are attracted by winners, and we're on the map all the time now. Now, we didn't play that well in our nationally televised game the other night, just like we did in the time before that. But at least we made it exciting.
Totally.
But we need to prove ourselves in the playoffs. And that, because if you go around the NBA, and remember, these guys don't necessarily go home and just watch SportsCenter all night. They're playing basketball. They're training. Right. They're doing all that kind of stuff. I know in the NHL, Patrick Kane says, I don't watch any of the games except for Austin Matthews games. Mm-hmm. But it's probably similar in basketball. So they go off with Stephen A. saying. And those guys are saying the Raptors are a bunch of chokers. And they're not winners and they don't have it. And so we need to break that mold too in order to get guys to believe that we have a core group of people. Listen, this, it doesn't matter how great Siakam is because we watch these stars every night. And we know that he's a special basketball player.
Yeah.
Other people know he is too, but not in the same way that we do.
Zach Lowe has closed the bandwagon for Pascal. No one else is allowed. Like he's a serious up and coming. But to touch on loudmouth Stephen A. Smith on First Take on Friday.
Love Stephen A.
Ugh, he was saying that right now he feels the only legitimate threats to the Warriors are the Raptors and the Celtics, and nobody else in the Western Conference. And he says he doesn't think either team can beat them because, let's face it, the Warriors are death lineup.
They are. I mean, it's
scary.
Tough. But Boston played them well last night.
DeMarcus has fit in perfectly, which is terrifying. But yeah, for Stephen A. Smith to say that, I thought that was pretty impressive. The only guy who I literally can't stand who gives the Raptors absolutely no credit is Paul Pierce. And
he's turning around a bit recently.
Ugh, I hate him.
I think he has.
I hate him. Fuck you, Paul. Oh, excuse me.
Don't worry. It's all good.
You get fired up in the fourth.
This is definitely not PG. Okay. What do we think? Is Pascal an all-star this year?
It's a tough call.
We're going to overtime if you guys want to keep
overtime, OT.
Should we save it?
We can talk a little bit about it. In terms of that, so we've got two open spots because there's two injuries in the Eastern on the Eastern Conference side for the All-Star game. Obviously, I'm a bias. I think Siakam, if you want to see what an All-Star or talk about what an All-Star is really someone that has such a great impact on their team. I mean, Siakam is the front runner for most improved player. If he doesn't win that, I'd be shocked.
That's a lock.
I think he's played well enough to be an all-star. But really, I mean, who are the other options?
Well, to
Bogdanovich is in there.
Stats here. I mean, he's averaging obviously career best numbers across the board. Ranks near the top of the league in efficiency, and I think right now he's got the 12th highest field goal percentage. So, to me, his numbers are solid. Advanced metrics obviously help paint a clearer picture of his value. Yeah, for me, he is an all-star. I don't think he's going to get it just because there's too many other options. But right now, he's right behind some of the game's best players in the win shares list, including guys like Kyrie, Karl Anthony Towns, Embiid. I just don't think the Raptors run enough plays through him. And a lot of his offensive success comes from thriving in sort of that chaotic environment and capitalizing off opponents' mistakes.
He's so close. Again, when we watch him every night, we know the type of player he is. He's a slasher. He's a around-the-rim guy. He needs to develop his mid-range game.
Yeah.
Because in the NBA now, you know, if you can't do a crossover pull-up, people just assume you're not that great. Like, there's, like, something missing from your game. You know what I mean? Draymond Green, the only reason he gets away with it, he's like seventh in the league in assists. The guy is just like his mid-range game is pretty ugly,
yeah.
But at the same point, he makes up for it another way. So Siakam, again, Phil and I used to love about DeRozan was that he got better every year, like noticeably better.
It was
crazy. Like, this guy can't get better. He can't develop this part of his game, and all of a sudden he's like the best dribbler in the NBA, and you're like, wow, this is really impressive. He went away for like a month and he came back a different person.
Yeah.
Siakam looks like a different person this year. And if he can do that one more time next year and develop that mid-range jumper, then I don't think he's just an all-star. I think his upside is shockingly high, right?
To me, he's...
But he may never develop that part of his game, and this is who he is. Sure. But if he does, I think that he's becomes a very special player because defensively, he's incredible. If you ask anyone in the NBA, they say he's the best runner of the floor.
Yeah.
He's insanely fast.
Oh, he's so quick.
The game where he hit the winner, he took one step from the 3-point line.
Yeah.
It was one step. Put the ball on the floor once and he was at the rim. Like, there's very few players that's a Greek freak type of a move.
And that go-to spin move that just stifles defenders is a thing of beauty.
He's improved. I think he deserves to, whether he gets it. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
I think we won that
time
one.
Time will
tell. 2-0 in overtime.
All right.
In any event, that wraps it. Until next week.
All right.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening. Bye.